All glories to all of you. Hare Krishna. Oma Gyanatha Mirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Malitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupagadamayam Tadati Swapadantikam. Hare Krishna. I'm not much of one for slinging slokas and cracking jokes, nor do I have a laptop in front of me like Madhav Maharaj had this morning. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to shoot from the hip. And we might hit some, and we might, even if we're shooting for the rhinoceros, it may be possible to hit a few squirrels, so to speak. So we can hope for the best and expect the worst, okay? What I'm going to discuss now is something that I like to harp on a little when people come to my room to take darshan of all of my shalagram. I have a lot of shalagrams, more than 1,200 at this point, and it takes me about 4 hours or so daily to do their puja. So someone might ascertain that Aindradas is into shalagram. But we should understand that at least my pradhan deity is Govardhan. My Govardhan Shila is my pradhan deity. Yet I only have maybe 4 Govardhan Shilas, and I have more than 1,200 shalagram. So what I want to discuss is I want to discuss the antara sarup of shalagram. What is shalagram tattva? Because over the years, many, many times, I've heard devotees coming to me from various factions of the Gaudiya tradition and trying to convince me, or at least expressing to me, that shalagram worship is not in our line. They say that our line is in the mood of the Braja Bhavas, so therefore our line is to worship Govardhan Shila, because Govardhan Shila is connected with Braja. And as Krishna Braja, Parikya Rasmai, Krishna Braja. And shalagram is Aishwaryamai worship, is not Madhuryamai worship. But you should know that that is a rather shallow conception of what shalagram worship is all about. Shalagram worship is no less Madhuryamai than Govardhan worship. It's just a question of the adhikar of the individual and his actual internal capacity to accommodate that aspect of shalagram worship. The proof that shalagram is Madhuryamai, the most solid proof, is Radharamanji. If shalagram worship is not in our line, in the Gaudiya line, then why is it that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in a dream to Gopal Bhatta Goswami and told him to go to Nepal and get his mercy? And what was that mercy that he got when he was taking his bath and then he was taking some water from Kali Gandaki River, and then some shalagrams came into his kamandalu, and then he dumped them back into the river, and again they came, and he dumped them back, and for a third time they came. And when he saw that there were 12 shalagram shilas there in his pot, so he just figured that, well, I guess they want to come to be with me. So actually that was the mercy that Mahaprabhu was referring to. So then he brings shalagram back to Braja. And then, you know, the rest of the story, how shalagram manifest on the day after Nrisimha Chaturdasi as Radharamanji, expanded into that form. At least so they say. We accept that they know what they're talking about, that they're not just pulling the wool over everyone's eyes just because they're the only ones that are allowed to see the backside of Radharaman. You know, only the Goswamis would be able to see them because no one else is allowed on the altar, so we have to more or less accept their version. So Radharamanji. So then I was speaking with Atul Krishna Goswami a few years ago. This was in a conversation where we were discussing the feasibility of worshipping the Govardhan Shila as Radha, because there was some contention about that. I had always given Govardhan Shila, Raghunath Das Goswami was giving Govardhan Shila as Radha Krishna. The Govardhan Shila was seen by him as Krishna directly. And the Gunjamala represented Radharani. So some might say that because Mahaprabhu gave him Govardhan Shila to worship as Krishna, and the Gunjamala was representing the embrace of Radharani, so therefore the Govardhan Shila should be worshipped in that way, that should be accepted as the standard. But there are many temples here that worship not only as Krishna, but they have one Shila is Krishna, one Shila is Radha. So I don't want to diverge into the Govardhan discussion too much. But the idea is, the reason why I'm bringing this up, is because Atul Krishna Goswami, when we started talking about the principle of Bhav Seva, there's a difference between Vidhi Marg and Rag Marg, and the outcome of it, or the practicality of it, as Bhav Seva in relationship to the deity. So when I mentioned Bhav Seva, Atul Krishna Goswami told me that, with Bhav Seva, there's no limitation. Even I remember I was speaking with Vishvambhar Goswami, the father of Padmaram Goswami at Radharaman, many years ago, and he was mentioning how, because there was some discussion concerning a disagreement that I was having with our revered Narayan Maharaj concerning whether or not the Govardhan Shila could be worshipped along with the Dwarka Shila. And Narayan Maharaj's argument was that the Dwarka Shila is in a different bhav. It's not in the Braja bhav. He went so far as to say that Dwarka Shila would be worshipped as Rukmini, you know, because from Dwarka. Of course, it's not really from Dwarka, it's from the Gomati River. You know, just like Shalagram's from the Kali Gandaki River. Just because it's up in Himalayan mountains doesn't mean that it's not Braja. It's an expanded Gupta Vrindavan. So anyway, Vishvambhar Goswami was arguing that if I wanted to, I could take this watch, and he held up his golden watch, and he said he could take this watch and put it on the altar and worship it as Radharani. He says, you probably won't be able to do that, but I can do it because I can link the externals to the internal. As a matter of fact, practically anything could be taken and worshipped as non-different from Radharani, in the sense that everything in this world is an expansion of Radha's energies. Mahamaya Devi is also Radharani. Prabhupada says that she's a phase of the moon of Radharani, although she's like the thin crescent, whereas Radharani is the full moon. But it's the same moon. You know, the crescent moon is not a different moon than the full moon. So in that sense, he was making this point to me. So Atul Krishna Goswami was also emphasizing the principle of Bhav Seva. Just like in Bhav Seva, you can even worship a watch as Radharani. So what to speak of worshipping the white Govardhan Shila as Radharani, along with the Govardhan Shila. And his argument was that in Hari Bhakti Vilas, it mentions that Shalagram is best worshipped along with the Gomti Chakra, or the Dwarka Shila. But he went on further to... He was translating Hari Bhakti Vilas in my presence for me, this section, and he was describing how Sanatana Goswami, he advocates that although any Vishnu Tattva deity can be worshipped in the Shalagram Shila, any Vishnu Tattva expansion like Varaha or Korma or Nrisimha, he says regardless of the external characteristics, the different types of chakras or things which are visible to us, just like what would be shastrically proven to be a Korma Shila, for example, could be worshipped as a Nrisimha Shila. In other words, Nrisimha Dev could be worshipped in the Korma Shila, or Vaman Dev, or anyone, practically. So Vishvambhar Goswami mentioned to me that Sanatan Goswami has commented that even though you can worship any Vishnu Tattva in any Shalagram, regardless of the external Lakshana, a pure devotee of Krishna will always see his or her Ishta Devata in any Shalagram, regardless of the external Lakshana. So therefore, he was saying that a pure devotee of Krishna, if he's a devotee of Dwarkadish Krishna, and he would be worshipping the Shalagram in that mood of desiring to see the form of Dwarkadish. So Krishna's Bhavagrahi Janardana, he reciprocates with the Bhav of the individual in Bhav Seva. So the Bhav of worshipping Dwarkadish would certainly accommodate Narayan Maharaj's idea that the Dwarkashila would be Rukmini, because Rukmini is in the Swakya Ras, she's in the Dwarka Bhav. So it's appropriate to worship the Dwarkashila with Shalagram in the mood of worshipping Rukmini Dwarkadish, because after all, the two are to be worshipped together. So how are you going to see him? Either you're going to see him as Krishna and Shankarshan or Baladeva. You know, are you going to see in terms of the Shakti Tattva that is included within the Shila? But if the devotee is a devotee of Brajendanandan Krishna, then it would be inappropriate for the devotee of Brajendanandan Krishna seeing his Ishtadevata Brajendanandan Krishna in the Shalagram Shila to be thinking of the Dwarka Shila as Rukmini. If he's making that mistake, then the Rasa Bhas is in his own misconception of the thing. It's not that the Rasa Bhas is in the object that is being worshipped, as Narayan Maharaj was advocating. He was saying that the Govardhan Shila is the Brajendanandan Krishna, and the Dwarka Shila is not in the Braja Bhava, so therefore there's Rasa Bhas. So therefore it cannot be done. But I appreciated Vishwamba Goswami's argument, because he made the point that the Brajendanandan Krishna worshipped in the Shalagram Shila would only be appropriately worshipped along with Radharani in the Dwarka Shila, and that the Dwarka Shila is also Bhavagrahi. So therefore, according to the individual's desire to see a particular aspect of Godhead, the Shalagram Shila will be seen, and the Dwarka Shila will be seen. Even the Govardhan Shila will be seen according to individuals' desires. Just like here on the altar of Krishna Balaram Mandir, in front of Krishna Balaram, one Govardhan Shila is Krishna, and the other Govardhan Shila is Balaram. And the pramana for this, the proof, is found in a book by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur entitled Brajavati Chintamani. So in this book, it's mentioned that when Radharani sees a crystal shila, a white-colored shila, then she immediately thinks that Balaram has come. So then she diverts her course and goes down a different path in order to avoid an embarrassing situation. And it mentions further that when Radharani sees a dark-colored shila, then she thinks that this shila is none other than her beloved Shyam. And then when Krishna sees a golden color Govardhan Shila, then he thinks that this shila is one of his gopi beloveds, particularly Radharani. But gopi beloveds means plural. So we have it that at Bhagwat Nivas, they worship the Govardhan Shila. One Shila is as Krishna, one Shila is as Radharani, and there's eight other Shilas being worshipped as the Astasakhis. See? So it has an awful lot to do with the individual's adhikar, his eligibility, his capacity to see what is what, his desire, his heartfelt aspirations to worship a particular aspect of Krishna. So in this way, Atul Krishna Goswami was discussing with me this principle of Bhav Seva, and he mentioned to me that when Gopal Bhatta brought back the Shilas, he brought back 12. But one of them, the Damodar Shila, turned into Radharamanji. And then Radharamanji having his place, but there was 11 other Shilas. So what did they do? They brought one Govardhan Shila and placed it with the 11 Shilas, Shalagram Shilas, and he says that they worship them as Dwadasa Gopalam at Radharaman Temple. In other words, they're not only worshiping Radharaman in Brajabhav, but they're worshiping all the Shalagrams there in Brajabhav. So he was making this point to me, how it is that according to Bhav, one can see what he wants to see, but then there should be Bhav, not a semblance of it. Something real should be manifesting in the heart, in the matter of one's sincere desperation to attain a loving relationship with the Lord of his heart or her heart. So, like that, we have to see practically what was Prabhupada's mood. In some places in Bhagavatam or Chaitanya Charitamrita, you'll find where Prabhupada mentions that the Shalagram is the Narayan Shila. But we should also remember that Narayan is another name for Krishna. Narayan doesn't necessarily mean Vaikunthanath. But anyway, even if he meant Vaikunthanath Narayan in the Aishwarya mood, but my dear friend Radhanath Maharaj, he told me one time that Srila Prabhupada gave 2 Shalagram Shilas to Kuladri, who happened to be the temple president at New Vrindavan at that time. When he was here in Vrindavan, Prabhupada gave him 2 Shalagram Shilas. One was to be worshipped personally by Kuladri Prabhu, and the other was to be given to the head pujari to be worshipped in the temple. The head pujari happened to be Radhanath Prabhu back then, now Maharaj. So Radhanath Maharaj told me that Prabhupada directly instructed Kuladri that you should dress him in a yellow dhoti with more mukut and a flute. So when Brijendranandan Krishna, when Krishna supposedly left Vrindavan, he left his flute behind, didn't he? So really, where's the flute player? The flute player is in Vrindavan. So Prabhupada told him that you should worship him in that way, with yellow dhoti, pitam barvesh, and the flute, more mukut, like that. And furthermore, one other proof of what was Prabhupada's mood is Jananivas in Mayapur. Prabhupada was trying to give Jananivas a Shalagram Shila, and Jananivas was declining to accept, telling Srila Prabhupada, "But Srila Prabhupada, I have no inclination, no nishta for worshipping Narayan. I want to worship Radha Madhava." So then what was Prabhupada's answer? He said, "Who says he's Narayan? I say he's Krishna. Now you take this Shalagram and worship is non-different from Madhava." So in this way, Prabhupada has expressed. And furthermore, I don't know how much time we have left, because I don't know what you Prabhus are going to do after this lecture, but I'm going to go to the temple and do a little kirtan. And I might even cut it a little short so I can get more kirtan time in, because that's my preferred devotional service. I usually don't speak like this very much. So anyway, there's another nice point concerning Shalagram's internal identity. And that is evident in the story of the appearance of Shalagram. Did Madan Maharaj tell the story? I didn't hear the whole class. He didn't tell the story at all? Huh? Oh, anyway. So I can try to just, in a gist. Tulsi Gopi in Golok Dham. First of all, this was in Vrindavan, Goloka Vrindavan. This incident, it all stems from Vrindavan. It doesn't stem from Vaikuntha. So when Tulsi fell unconscious, it's mentioned in one of the Puranas, how Tulsi fell unconscious, I think it was at the Rasa dance, was it not? One Rasa dance was there, and Tulsi fell unconscious out of ecstasy of being with Krishna. So Radharani became incensed, because after all, the show has to go on. You know, she should have been more in control of her senses, perhaps. So anyway, it's described how Radharani cursed Tulsi to descend to this material world. And when she descended, she became known as Tulsi Maharani. And also Sudama, not Sridama, the brother of Radharani, but Sudama Gopa, at a certain point, as far as I remember, it was when Viraja was consorting with Krishna in privacy, and Radharani wanted to search out the whereabouts of Krishna and found Sudama at the gate of Viraja Gopi's kunja. So Sudama was denying that Krishna was there. But Radharani wasn't accepting it, you know, and she was calling to Viraja to come out. And little did Viraja know, but she had Krishna's chatur on. So she was denying also, but then Radharani says, then whose chatur is this? And she cursed Viraja to also appear in the material world. And she cursed Sudama because Sudama was denying her. So she cursed him to become a demon. So he became the demon Shankarachuda. And then, of course, as it generally happens, there's a little retaliation. Sudama got Radharani back good by cursing her to have to experience 100 years of separation from Krishna. So that's why in the Bhoma-lila, the Sudur Pravas, where Krishna goes to a distant place for residing in a distant place like Dwarka, so then for 100 years she had to bear the separation of Krishna with each moment seeming like a millennium of most intense separation from Krishna. So anyhow, in the story where first by the benediction of Brahma, Tulsi Gopi and Sudama were married by Gandharva rites. And then, of course, Tulsi was performing penances to appease Lord Brahma to get Narayan as her husband. But do you think Krishna was going to let her have Narayan without having him? You know? So anyway, first Tulsi Gopi and Shankarachuda were married. Both of them were Jati Smara, which means that they had recollection of their previous existence in Golok Dham. They never lost their memory of their position as Gopa and Gopi. But because there was a little desire in Sudama's heart, being a partial manifestation of Krishna, his Sarup Shakti manifestation of his Purusha Abhiman, Krishna's Purusha Abhiman, so naturally there was a little Purusha Bhav in him, so he desired to consort with Tulsi Gopi. So in this way, arrangements were made by the transcendental system, as Prabhupada would say, for the two of them to conjugate, but not in Golokdham, in the material world. So they became husband and wife, and then Brahma had given Shankachuda the benediction that as long as he wore the amulet, the Narayan Kavacha, and as long as his wife would remain unpolluted by any other men, that he would be invincible. So then he became a little proud, although he was a eternal first-class devotee of Krishna. Even a Shankachuda, he worshipped Krishna, Brijendanandan Krishna, not Narayan. So in the course of his universal exploits, the demigods became nonplussed. So they approached Lord Brahma, who delegated the responsibility to Lord Shiva. So then Lord Shiva was to accept the challenge of battling with Shankachuda. So then they were battling and battling and battling. And of course, Lord Shiva pulled for his super-duper Pashupati weapon or whatever it was. I can't remember exactly. But then an omen, Akashvani, came and told him that, no, you're not the one to kill him under these circumstances, because after all, Brahma gave this benediction, so the benediction should be kept intact. Although he was quite capable of killing him. Although I really don't see why or how, because Sudama is in a much superior position than Lord Shiva as a partial manifestation of Brijendananda Krishna. You know, but anyhow, that's the Leela. So the Leela has it that the demigods approached Vishnu, and Vishnu said, don't worry, Hari will take care of everything. So who was the Hari that Vishnu was referring to start with? Then Hari will take care of everything. So then Hari took the form of an old Brahmin who approached Shankachuda, who was very charitable to Brahmins. And Shankachuda was more or less forced by circumstance to relinquish his kavacha upon the request of the Brahmin. Then Hari, mischievously, see, it's just like, we have to remember that Hari is very, let's say, tricky. Just like sometimes Krishna takes the form of a demigoddess, or sometimes Krishna takes the form of a female doctor, or sometimes Krishna even takes the form of a four-armed Narayan. Just like at Govardhan during Ras Lila, and the gopis were running to search for Krishna, and then they bow down to the four-armed, but it was not Narayan, it was Krishna playing games, putting on a show. Then when Radharani came, he couldn't maintain his composure. He lost it, so to speak, and in the course of losing it, lost his two other arms. So Krishna is very expert at taking on different guises. So just like he took on the guise of an old Brahmin, so then he also took on a perfect guise, a perfect representation, replica, of Shankachuda. And as an imposter husband, imposter Shankachuda, approached the palace of Tulsi Maharani with much pomp and fanfare, as if he was coming home victorious from battle. Then Tulsi Maharani greeted him and appropriately rewarded him in the privacy of her own chambers. But upon conjugating, she realized that the bliss that she was experiencing under the circumstances was not the same as the experience that she had when conjugating with Shankachuda. Rather, it was far surpassing. Because after all, he was Krishna directly. So we have to analyze what was happening actually at that time. You will not find anywhere in Shastra that Narayan is Parakya Rasmai. He doesn't enjoy Parakya Ras. Vishnu doesn't enjoy Parakya Ras. None of the Das Avataram enjoy Parakya Ras, except for Balaram. And that's Brijendanandan Krishna Balaram. So the fact of the matter is that Shankachuda, the imposter Shankachuda, who was Hari himself, was enjoying another man's wife in Parakya Ras. Only Krishna and Balaram, that aspect of Balaram, in Braja, enjoy Parakya Ras. So therefore, even though it is seen in the story how it is that he accepted a forearm form standing before Tulsi, but he also accepted a forearm form standing before the other gopis. And it wasn't Tulsi Gopi that made him drop his two arms. It was only Radharani who made him drop his two arms, so he was quite capable of maintaining his forearm composure in front of Tulsi. So then Tulsi Gopi became totally distressed upon understanding that Shankachuda, who she knew to be a very dear devotee of Lord Krishna, she tells to this Hari, even though he is in forearm form, she tells him that how could you do such a thing? How could you, just to satisfy the demigods, who are nothing but a bunch of Sakama Bhaktas anyway, how could you think to destroy your own devotee when you personally say that my devotee never perishes? How could you do such a thing? You're so hard-hearted that you would prefer to favor the rascal demigods than to favor your own pure devotee. So because your heart is as hard as a stone, therefore I curse you to become a stone. But who was she cursing to become a stone? She was cursing that person who would think to cause the demise of his own devotee. Whose own devotee? Whose devotee was Shankachuda? He was Krishna's devotee, to start with. He was Krishna's devotee, and the fact that the reason why she was cursing him is because she realized that because he did Parakya Ras with her and she became polluted, then Brahma's benediction was finished, which made her understand that the life of Shankachuda was finished. So because he was Parakya Rasmai and because he killed his own devotee, who happened to be a devotee of Brijendanandan Krishna. So it has to be understood that who was cursed to become a stone was actually Krishna. Krishna was cursed to become a stone. So it was Krishna who became Shalagram. And Shastra has it that Krishna, Brijendanandan Krishna, in the Puranas, it is mentioned that Brijendanandan Krishna is present in every Shalagram, regardless of the external characteristics. So, if Brijendanandan Krishna is in every Shalagram, then there's no wonder that the Damodar Shila manifests as Radharaman. Who is Radharaman? He is the one who gives pleasure to Radharani. Not gives pleasure to Lakshmi, not that gives pleasure to Rukmini, but certainly not who gives pleasure to Kubja, but who gives pleasure to Radharani. So that Krishna who enjoys Parakya Ras as he enjoyed Parakya Ras with Tulsi Maharani is the actual identity of Shalagram. Shalagram is Krishna. He's Brijendanandan Krishna. He's the lover of the gopis. He's the lover of Radharani, the son of Nanda Baba, the friend of Subal. So that is Shalagram. So if that is Shalagram, and you're thinking that Shalagram is Aishwarya Bhav Mahi, then that is the Rasabhas. And because you're absorbed in worshipping Brajendranandan Krishna as Aishwarya Mahi, personality of Godhead, then do you think that Brajendranandan Krishna is going to reveal himself to you? Why should he reveal himself to someone who is completely incapable of actually identifying his real identity? He will elude the devotee and allow him to go on thinking that he is Aishwarya Mahi Narayan or something, and therefore not in our line. Will you please, you and your horns? In India, everyone drives with their horn. That's the hallmark of India's heritage these days. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So what time is it now? 5:53. So just a few more minutes, and I'll just wrap it up with one other point, which is a very nice point to consider concerning Shalagram Puja. By the way, in some places in Padma Purana, it's mentioned that, don't be angry at me, but if women touch Shalagram or offer flowers to Shalagram or sandalwood paste to Shalagram, then it is as if a thunderbolt strikes the head of Krishna. And it goes on further to say that if she offers bhoga to Shalagram, then it is no better than an offering of the most deadly poison. So it says that in one place. But in Skanda Purana, it mentions that that only applies to women who have not taken properly Pancharatrika Diksha. It mentions there that sudras, even a sudra, anyone who's not born in a Brahmin family, if they offer anything or touch Shalagram, then it's like a thunderbolt on the head of Krishna. What to speak of women, you see. But Skanda Purana says that therefore everyone, because kalo sudra sambhava, everyone is born low, papayoni practically. There's hardly anyone who's actually brahminically inclined. What to speak of born Brahmin. So therefore everyone, he says, including the Brahmin class, everyone, including Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras, Chandalas, Malechas, and women, it says, including women, that they should take the Pancharatrika Diksha and then worship the Shalagram of their choice that they're attracted to. So women can also worship Shalagram. That's just a side point. So back to the principle of the internal identity of Shalagram. And that is that, just like we were making the point that the different characteristics of the Shalagram, according to Shastra, I don't bother to even investigate very deeply that too much, but every now and then I recognize this kind of Shila or that kind of Shila, you know, according to markings of the Shila. The difficulty is in the Shastras, it'll mention one kind of Shila as Sankarshan, but then in another Shastra, it'll mention the same kind of Shila as Pradyumna. Cheesy peasy. Which is right. So in so many places it's like that. It's frustrating when you're trying to figure out what kind of Shila is what. Some Shilas are considered to be inauspicious to worship, and some Shilas are considered to be auspicious to worship. But only a fool would think there's anything inauspicious or auspicious about Krishna. If someone's thinking that something is inauspicious about any Shila, even a broken Shila, then he deserves to get the result of worshipping the broken Shila, which is intensified anxiety or distress or death or any death of one's wife or death of one's sickness, like the red Shila brings increased bodily diseases. I have two red Shilas, which is maybe why I'm always, you know, having trouble with my throat and stuff. But it's a small price to pay for love of Godhead. Those who are Sakama Bhaktas, they will consider the different Lakshana in terms of whether something is a beneficial Shila to worship or not. But Nishkama Bhaktas and pure devotees, they don't think in these terms. Rather, they worship not for results, but they worship to please Krishna, please. They worship because they can't live without Krishna. And they need to be engaged in their eternal constitutional relationship with Krishna. And Shalagram has so kindly come, you know, regardless of who he supposedly is. We know who he is. He's Krishna. But just as he dons different disguises... Harinam Samkirtan ki jai. So just as he dons different disguises in various ways, as we described, female doctor, demigoddess, this or that or the other. So similarly, he dons disguises so as to bewilder less advanced devotees, Prakriti Bhaktas, or making them think that he's someone who he's not. Or he puts on these different dresses, so to speak, to remind the pure devotee of different aspects of Krishna's personality. Krishna's personality is the origin of all other personalities of Godhead. So you will find in Rupa Goswami's Hansadutta and also Kavi Kanapur's Ananda Vrindavan Champu, there are descriptions of how the gopis see Krishna as the Dasavataram. They will say that Krishna's Nisringa Krishna and burst out laughing how he's Nisringa Krishna because he bifurcates the blouse of Chandravali. The Sakis of Radha will joke with Krishna like this. So, in other words, we can see the original feature of Nisringadev in Krishna, in Krishna's own original personality. Something doesn't come from nothing. So whatever is there in Nisringadev is originally found in Krishna's personality. So he manifests as a Nisringa Shila, in quotes, to remind the devotee of that aspect of his personality. Similarly, he manifests as a Vaman Shila. Just like Vamana took everything from Bali. Bali offered his everything, but Vaman ungratefully tossed him into the nether regions. So similarly, Radharani offers her everything to Krishna. And Krishna, being the ungrateful reprobate that he is, I'm winking at that, you know, he's never ungrateful. But, you know, he tossed her into an abyss of unbearable separation when he supposedly left Vrindavan. Like that. So different aspects of Krishna's personality can be seen in relationship to the various... So it should not disturb one's ekantika bhav. If we worship Shalagram, even if we have a myriad of Shalagrams, I have, like I said, more than 1,200. But I see them all as Krishna. Except for one last point. And that is, as any Vishnu Tattva deity can be worshipped in any Shalagram, so the Shalagram can also be worshipped as Gaur Krishna. By worshipping Shalagram as Gaur Krishna, then Gaur never considers any offenses. In Shalagram worship, offenses to the deity worship, the seva aparadam, are destroyed. That's another topic of discussion which we don't have time for. But in any case, the proof that Shalagram is Gaura and can be worshipped as Gaura is also Radharaman. Gaura appeared in the dream to Gopal Bhatta Goswami and expressed to him that he was non-different from Radharamanji. Radharaman is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, although they worship as Radharaman. And most people think of him in terms of Krishna, but they see as none other than Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. As we are followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, so I also worship one Shalagram as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I worship one Shalagram as Nityananda. And I have two shalagrams worshipped as Shyam Balaram. You know, one is as Balaram also. But all the rest are that blackish rake. You know, I shouldn't say it, but I feel separation from him because I used to worship Radha Shyam Sundar every day. For more than a year and a half, I was every day worshiping Radha Shyam Sundar in the temple. So when I had to back out of that service due to the kirtan program becoming more taxing to me, so then I needed something to fill up that empty space, that all that black, you know, so at least 1,200 shalagrams are required, you know, to satisfy my, you know, desperation for, you know, as much black as what our Shamsundar is all about. So anyway, there's one question here, but we have to go for kirtan. Yes. Hare Krishna. I can't. Huh? You know, in that he is Haridas Varya, it may be thought to be a possibility. After all, Radha and Krishna are Radha and Krishna. Yes, sir. Huh? Anyway, but let's hurry because I really want to go for kirtan.
Yeah, I know that.
I feel more separation from kirtan than I do from Shyam Sundar. Nam is higher than Anami.
So I know that you are anxious to go to kirtan ras, but for the benefit of all devotees.
They should also come for kirtan ras.
Yes. I want to ask you three questions, synthesizing one. You mentioned good point that according to our emotion to Nityananda Baba, we should worship Orissa Devata in that way. And that book of Padmanabha Goswami that I translate to Spanish, I also asked to him about the meaning of seeing the silas in that way.
Yeah.
So please, you can tell, because many devotees, they approach to me, how they can go over and sila, how should we take with the permission of who and like that.
Yeah, that's another good point is shalagram can only be worshipped if you get the permission of your guru. Otherwise, it mentions that the shalagram puja yields no result. You have to take permission of your guru after having taken Pancharatrika Diksha. Okay? May we adjourn this meeting, please, and go for kirtan? Shri Shri Radhe Shyam Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.